Weekday afternoons on BBC Radio 3. Mussorgsky. Mahler. Massenet. And more. Join me for Afternoon on Three as we hear the BBC National Orchestra of Wales at the height of its powers with some of its eminent conducting team. Weekday afternoons from 2 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's a minute after one. Time for the news with David Cornett.
Police in Northern Ireland investigating the murder of one of their officers suspect that dissident Republicans were behind the killing. 25-year-old Ronan Carr, who was a Catholic, died when a bomb exploded under his car yesterday as he set off to work at Enniskillen Police Station. The Chief Constable of Northern Ireland, Matt Baggett, called the killers a potent and dangerous minority. The First Minister of Northern Ireland, Peter Robinson, insisted that the murder wouldn't deter Catholics from joining the police service. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has restated that the former Libyan Foreign Minister, who fled to the UK, Moussa Koussa, hasn't been offered immunity from prosecution. Some victims of IRA bombings, which involved explosives supplied by Libya in the 1980s, want Mr. Koussa prosecuted. He's also been accused of involvement in the Lockerbie bombing. Mr. Hague told the BBC that Mr. Koussa wasn't under arrest, but that he hadn't been given any guarantees. Two Afghan police officers are reported to have been killed in a third day of protests against the burning of a copy of the Quran by a pastor in the United States. The latest deaths were in Kandahar, where 10 people died yesterday. In Ivory Coast, troops fighting for the winner of November's election, Alassane Ouattara, are said to be planning a further push to take control of the presidential palace. They aim to oust the former president, Laurent Gbagbo, who's refused to accept the election result. Reports say French troops have taken over the airport in the main city, Abidjan. Here, the government is to launch a new drive to sell its plans to voters for the NHS in England, amid concern at the lack of public support as well as opposition from some Liberal Democrats. It's expected that there'll be a number of changes to the legislation when it returns to the House of Lords, including measures to prevent private health providers cherry-picking profitable NHS services. The weather forecast is for sunshine and showers. The showers are likely to be heavy and thundery in places, particularly in central England and Wales and towards the southwest. Temperatures ranging between 10 and 14 degrees Celsius. BBC News and weather at 3 minutes past one.
With David Cornett. Well, at five in Discovering Music, Stephen Johnson joins the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and the conductor Alexander Titov for an exploration of Rachmaninoff's symphonic dances. Before that, as I said, Choral Evensong at 4 and Radio 3 Requests at 2 o'clock with Chichi Nwanuku. But it's time now to join Lucy Skeeping for today's edition of The Early Music Show.
Hello and welcome to the show. That was a little galliard played by an old friend of mine, the lutenist Christopher Wilson. We were at the Royal College together, and as a mere violinist in those days, I think his lute was probably the first one I'd ever seen, close up at any rate. It's such a pretty sound, and it's an instrument that would certainly have been very familiar to the composer of that galliard, Alfonso Ferrabosco, an Italian who worked in England at the Elizabethan court on and off for some 16 years. An investigation of Ferrabosco immediately brings up a large and complicated family tree that dates back to the 1400s, to Alfonso's great-great-grandfather Domenico, who served at the magnificent house of the rulers of Bologna. He doesn't seem to have been a musician himself, but the family was to spawn at least three of them, a father and son and a cousin. And in today's programme, we're going to be focusing on the lives and the music of these three 16th century Ferraboscos. Alfonso, the oldest of them, was one of eight children. Like some touring theatrical clan, they all travelled with their parents to wherever the work was, to Rome, where their father sang in the Sistine Chapel choir, and then to France. Alfonso was still only about 12 or 13 years old at this point, but his new home must have impressed him. It was the palace of Charles of Guise, a powerful cardinal who surrounded himself with poets and intellectuals. And it wasn't long before he had the three young Ferrabosco brothers singing for his guests, who were evidently mightily impressed by their sweet tones. Gesture and sound and voice together, like three Apollos singing gently to the lyre, twittered the posh poet Pierre de Ronsard after hearing them. So the trois Ferrabosques Italiens, as the French called them, were wheeled out whenever music was required, which included performing at the wedding of the Dauphin to Mary Queen of Scots, who incidentally was the cardinal's niece. But by the early 1560s, at the age of 19, Alfonso decided to spread his wings and travel to England. And it was here, as one of the Queen's musicians, that he composed the two viol consorts we'll hear now.
Thank you.
Music for Viol Consort by Alfonso Ferrabosco the Elder, a pavan followed by an In Nomine performed by Phantasm. So Ferrabosco from Bologna was now in the service of Queen Elizabeth. And yet just a year later, we find him back in Italy again, in Rome, working at the court of Cardinal Farnese. The following summer, though, he seems to have had a change of heart and wanted to return to England. The Cardinal, as you can understand, was reluctant to release him, but it appears Ferrabosco did leave, nevertheless, in secret. And the Tudor court was evidently relieved to have him back because he was given a pension for life on the condition that this time he really did stay put. However, that appears to have been the one thing Alfonso Ferrabosco just couldn't do, and just a few years later we find him back in Italy again, having promised Sir William Cecil, the Secretary of State, that it would just be a short trip. He failed to return, and excuse followed excuse. He had some business to attend to in Bologna, he wrote, and then that he'd been robbed of all his possessions. And finally, he explained to Cecil that if he left Italy without a licence, his family would be threatened by the Inquisition. I'll let you know what happened next in a moment, but first let's hear some more music. This time one of Alfonso's sacred works, one of his glorious settings of the Lamentations of Jeremiah. Traditionally, this was performed as night fell on the solemn days leading up to Good Friday. It's a dark and penitential text, and the candles in the church would be snuffed out one by one as the choir approached the final anguished call, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, turn towards the Lord.
Thank you.
Lamentations of Jeremiah, one of four settings of the text made by the 16th century Italian-born musician Alfonso Ferrabosco. The performers were the Talis scholars, directed by Peter Phillips. Now settled back at the Tudor court once more, Ferrabosco was, perhaps surprisingly, still in the Queen's good books and one of a small, select group of musicians who were granted access to the Queen's private apartments. That most famous Alfonso Ferrabosco of Bologna, they called him. Then, late one summer, he fell seriously out of favour. The trouble was, whether you were a Catholic or whether you were a Protestant was a very serious thing in those days, and a rumour had reached the ears of the authorities that Alfonso had, shock horror, attended Mass at the residence of the French ambassador. The whispers gathered pace. He was accused of murdering a young courtier, even of being a spy. The Queen was not amused, but although she did eventually accept his innocence, things were never quite the same again. Ferrabosco decided to return to his homeland for the last time, leaving behind his son, also named Alfonso, and who, as we'll hear in the next part of the programme, was to become an even more celebrated musician than his father. But before we move on to the next generation of Ferrabosco's, let's hear a final set of music by Alfonso the Elder. It had been a restless life, and a risky one too, with accusations and threats from the highest quarters, even a spell in prison. And yet throughout all this, as a musician at any rate, he continued to be admired. A phoenix of our age, they called him, creator of songs to which even Apollo might lay claim. We're going to hear Phantasm again, with Sulla Russe, a consort for six viols based on an old chanson. But first, the expert fingers of one of our longest established lutenists, Anthony Rulli, with a Fantasia, a thoughtful, free-form piece that Rulli considers to be one of Alfonso's finest.
Thank you.
two final works by Alfonso Ferrabosco the Elder, Sulla Russe for six-part viol consort performed by Phantasm, and before that Anthony Rulli played a lute fantasia. For most of the remainder of today's programme, we're going to hear pieces by Alfonso's son, another Alfonso, who we'll call the younger, so there's no confusion. But before that, let me introduce you briefly to a third family member, a cousin, Constantino Ferrabosco. We certainly know much less about this fellow, except that he worked in Nuremberg around the 1590s in the service of Emperor Rudolf and composed a handful of songbooks, at least one of them dedicated to a German aristocrat by the name of Baron Christoph Fugger. They must have been a musical lot, these Fuggers. The library of their castle in Bavaria is chock-a-block with the very best in Renaissance music, all dedicated to family members. No doubt they were well-thumbed volumes, and their castle's magnificent cedar hall with a huge flickering fire at one end, perhaps, must have provided the perfect setting for an evening of family madrigal singing.
Thank you.
A madrigal by Constantino Ferrabosco, performed by the Consort of Music. I'm Lucy Skeeping and you're listening to The Early Music Show. And for the rest of the programme, we're going to be hearing pieces by Alfonso Ferrabosco the Younger, second cousin to Constantino and son of Alfonso, who we heard earlier. Now, this Ferrabosco was born in Greenwich, and because, as we've heard, his father had upped and left back to Bologna, he was brought up by a flautist in the Queen's service. He was soon on the payroll himself, though, as a groom of the Privy Council and teaching music to the young Prince Henry. This was certainly a particularly exciting time to be a musician at the English court. The Tudor monarchs were very keen on the exciting new dramatic music that was coming over from the continent. And although the English never really got on with, shall we say, full-blown opera at this stage anyway, they did have a special form of theatrical entertainment, the masque. This was a sort of fusion of theatre, pageant, circus and concert, full of elaborate stage designs, dancing, extravagant costumes, at times, I suppose, rather like a carnival in which the king himself and his courtiers would participate. Naturally, these very grand affairs attracted the greatest artists of the day, people like Ben Jonson and the brilliant designer Inigo Jones, who, together with Ferrabosco, produced at least 8 masques. Sadly, the details of most of them are now lost, but we do have some of the music at least, and the next 2 songs perfectly represent the mood of this so-called metaphysical age. The second song is to a text by the poet John Donne. So leave off this last lamenting kiss which sucks 2 souls and vapours both away. But before that, words by Ben Jonson. So beauty on the water stood when love had severed earth from flood. So when he parted air from fire, he did with concord all inspire. It's from The Masque of Beauty of 1608.
Cheap a death.
Two masked songs by Alfonso Ferrabosco, performed there by the tenor Mark Padmore with lutenist Nigel North. Ferrabosco was also a prominent string player at court. He led a four-man consort of viols, and to a large extent it's this repertoire that he's best known for today. But he was also a member of the King's Violin Band, which provided music for dancing, an activity which the Stuarts adored. It was a good form of exercise, and during the masque, the whole court, including the royal family, would take to the floor alongside the actors and show off their terpsichorean accomplishments. We're going to hear a pavan and an alman, dances that at this transitional time for bowed instruments could equally well be played on viols, or indeed on the new violins held at the shoulder, as we're going to hear them now.
Thank you.
the Parley of Instruments with two court dances by Alfonso Ferrabosco the Younger. On New Year's Day, 1611, Ben Jonson's Masque of Oberon was staged at the banqueting house in Whitehall. The songs and dances were a combined effort. Ferrabosco was just one of several composers involved. And although hardly any of it survives, we know the masque was specially created as a vehicle for the 16-year-old Prince Henry, who took the title role. The whole point of it was to flatter the monarch, impress and amaze foreign visitors, to be as lavish as possible, and to generally confirm the status quo. Paul Agnew and Jacob Herringman begin the set with a song from Oberon's Fairyland.
Nay, nay, you must not stay, nor be weary yet. This is no time to cast away, or for fairies to forget the virtue of their feet. Nay, nay, you must not stay, nor be weary yet. This is no time to cast away, or for fairies to forget the virtue of their feet. Naughty legs and plants of clay seek for ease or love delay, but with you it still should fare as with the air, as with the air, as with the air. Naughty legs and plants of clay seek for ease or love delay, but with you it still should fare as with the air, as with the air, as with the air. But with you it still should fare as with the air, as with the air, as with.
Ah.
two of the surviving original songs from Ben Jonson's Masque of Oberon of 1611, the music by Alfonso Ferrabosco the Younger. Joseph Cornwell was accompanied by lutenist Tom Finucane in Gentle Nights, and before that the performers were Paul Agnew with lutenist Jacob Herringman. Well, we've more or less come to the end of the line for the Ferrabosco family. Alfonso the Younger rose through James's court to become composer to Charles I and a celebrated performer on the viol. On his death, two of his sons, another Alfonso and a Henry, were granted musical posts at court. And a third, John, became organist at Ely Cathedral, whilst two daughters married musicians. But that seems to be the last we hear of them all. Time was moving on. The viol consort was being replaced in popular taste by the flashy new violin band, and it wouldn't be long, of course, before the Civil War would arrive to turn the world upside down. We'll let Alfonso the Younger, the most celebrated of them all, have the final word with a fantasia for viols, the most creative of instrumental forms in which Alfonso so excelled, and of which he was undoubtedly a pioneer. Here's Hesperian 21 with Fantasia number 6 in 6 parts.
Alfonso Ferrabosco the Younger's Fantasia No. 6, played by Hesperian 21, ending today's programme, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping. In the Early Music Show next Saturday, Catherine Bott explores an extraordinary work by Guillaume de Machaut, Le Voir dit, The True Story. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news, here on BBC Radio 3.
Beethoven's Violin Concerto, one of the touchstones of the repertoire for any violinist, and in a century of recording, the finest fiddle players of every generation have immortalised their interpretations, and they're joined on disc by some of the most exciting young players around at the moment. In this week's Building a Library, violinist and conductor Roy Goodman joins me to see how the brightest and best of the newcomers compare to the classic recordings. It's going to be fascinating hearing them through Roy's ears. And the CD review disc of the week brings more brand new Beethoven, played by Alexei Lyubimov, on the kind of piano the composer would have recognised. I'm Andrew McGregor. Join me for CD Review, Saturdays from 9 on BBC Radio 3.
Looking ahead to 9:30 this evening, our Sunday feature is called The Pleasure Telephone, and it tells the remarkable story of the use of the early telephone to relay live entertainment and news direct to subscribers' homes in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Edward Seckerson visits key locations, including the Opéra Comique in Paris, the Amberley Working Museum in Sussex, the Palace Theatre in London, and the Museum of London, which owns an original electrophone table at which subscribers sat to listen via special headsets. That's our Sunday feature, The Pleasure Telephone, at 9:30 this evening. But now it's just after 2 o'clock, and we go over to Chichi Nwanaku for this week's edition of Radio 3 Requests,
where we find our listener Lizzie Phillips yearning to hear Britain's Missa Brevis, having lost her only vinyl copy some 30 years ago. Lizzie, I'm sorry you've had to wait such a long time. Enjoy.
Lord.